Good evening. Welcome to the open session of the meeting of the Board of Directors of the Kensington Police Protection and Community Services District. It is Thursday, April 27, 2017. I am Board President Rochelle Sherris-Watt, and I will now take roll. Director Welsh?
Here.
Director Hussai?
Here.
Vice President Natoli?
Here.
I'm Board President Rochelle Sherris-Watt, as I said, and unfortunately, Director Cordova will not be joining us this evening by remote due to health issues. I apologize for our late start, but we will now take public comments for items not appearing on the agenda. Pardon? Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. The board has nothing to report out from closed session. Public comments? Being none, we will now move on to board comments. Any from members of our board? I will report out briefly. The Finance Committee met last evening and took a first look at the preliminary budget for the fiscal year 2017-2018. The committee determined that they would like an extra meeting to examine the budget, given all the moving parts and differing pieces we have this year. So there will be a special meeting next Thursday, May 4th, in addition to the regular May 24th meeting already calendared. All right. Staff comments?
No comments.
All right. We'll move on to the consent calendar. Any items that people wish to pull from the consent calendar?
Yes, the correspondence.
All right. That would be item G.
Yes.
Any other items on the consent calendar? Minutes, Mr. Bergen?
Just a correction.
For which date would you like a correction?
For the last meeting.
The last meeting, that would be 4:15, item A. Okay. Okay. And all righty. Then we will begin with your comments, Mr. Bergen, if you would like to come and correct.
Okay. There was a question about the Wi-Fi, and it turns out that the actual numbers for the data allowance are 60 gigabytes per month. However, we get 50 gigabytes between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. and 10 gigabytes for the rest of the day, which means 6 p.m. to 8 a.m. the next morning. The speed of it is approximately 3.5 megabits per second. And tonight I measured it, and that's about what we're getting.
Sorry, could you repeat the speed?
The speed is 3.5 megabits per second. That's down. Up is lower than that. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. I have had several tests. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so I want to make sure, clarify, these are comments about the minutes, not corrections for the minutes.
They're actually corrections.
But they were correctly listed. They reflect what was said at the first.
What I said is correct, and the minutes do reflect what was said.
All right.
But what was said needed to be corrected.
Oh,
that makes sense.
It needed to be clarified or expanded upon.
Yes, we had incorrect statements. Yes.
And I can give you all those numbers.
That's what I was going to ask.
I can give you all those numbers later too. There.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Avery Benson here. There was one item of correspondence that was, I did not see that it was signed at all. It was the item about the newspaper article about El Cerrito and the sheriff and dispatch. And I just don't think it appropriate that we include unsigned anonymous letters in our agenda packet. And I mean, if it was a board member or a staff member, then they should have said, signed it and said, I'm submitting this. And I think this issue has come up before, and it was considered inappropriate to have anonymous correspondence.
Thank you.
Is there any clarification for...
Are we talking about an email from Chuck Sims?
No. Item 23.
Page 23.
It's the article about
page 23. Page
23 in the agenda packet.
Yes, I believe it's an article from the East Bay Times, if I'm correct.
Which,
but I do not know. I agree.
It's informative for the public, but somebody should just acknowledge that they put it in there.
I agree. I do not know who submitted it.
Okay, well, and I don't know who prepared the agenda packet, but we should
check.
Kind of keep an eye out for that point. Thank
all
you.
Right. Is there any clarification on who submitted it, or...
Yeah, it was suggested to me to add it into the agenda as correspondence.
Well, by who? Either their name should go, they should submit it with their name, or you should say something like a member of the public.
Well, wait a minute. So you made the decision to put it in the agenda, right? In the packet?
Yes.
And it's your submission?
My submission.
Okay, well...
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Future, we will. All right.
The staff is entitled to have correspondence due.
All right. Would anyone like to make a motion for acceptance of the consent calendar if there are no further comments?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Yes.
Aye.
All right. The consent calendar is approved 4-0. We're now returning to old business. The board will review and consider for approval the CAD RMS record services contract sent to us by Albany PD. General Manager Holt will speak to us concerning this updated contract. It's on page 29 of the agenda. Are you ready to, you want to go ahead and chat about changes?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are now at the point to where we are establishing an agreement with the City of Albany to provide the CAD, RMS, and record services. This is the contract that I have negotiated with Chief Mcquiston of the Albany Police Department. This contract enumerates all the services that we're going to need in order to stay operational that they are willing to provide. I have had several discussions with Chief Mcquiston concerning this. I think we have a pretty good deal for what we're going to be getting. I've got a discounted rate for the first year that's going to help offset some of the costs that it's going to cost the district to get online with the new vendor. It's pretty comprehensive and it's pretty complete. I don't see any pitfalls. The one thing I did, one thing that I've learned since I've been engaged in this process is that there are hidden costs that I didn't know to anticipate. So there is a section of this contract that's going to allow us to go 1 year and then revisit part of it in order to try to get more money to help the district offset those costs. So that's probably the latest addition to the contract that I want to make everyone aware of. There is a certain issue concerning that I'm dealing with now concerning our data that's being housed under the current vendor. It's a question as to whether or not we're going to be able to retrieve that data or not. I haven't got the complete answer yet, or the final answer from our new vendor, Sunridge. But there may be some technical difficulties with that process. And what that means is, in the worst case scenario, we may lose all the data prior to July 1st, 2017. It translates into because of the technical difficulties, they may not be able to grab that data in order to put on the servers so that we would have all this data that we've been producing prior to July 1st, 2017.
Have you been able to check with the other cities that are leaving Richmond, like San Pablo, to see if we could get data from them?
That I haven't tried. I haven't asked that yet, but that still would be a technical question with Sunridge to see if they can extract that data.
If the data can't be extracted, is there a way to still have access to it if we needed it? I don't know enough to know, do we need it for sure, or could we access it without extracting it?
I don't know the answer to that. I'll have to answer that one for you in an email.
All right. That's an unfortunate development, but I think that we are, as the newspaper article will show you, we're doing very well with this contract, and we're in a lucky position to have negotiated it. So I thank you. Public comment? Would you like to make?
Well, really, just a question.
Please.
Peter Liddell. Chief, what's the nature of the data that we are losing or have and could potentially lose?
It is the data that had been housed on the RMS system of the vendor that we're leaving. So it would be names, addresses.
Of, I'm guessing you have a directory of Kensington residents, something like that.
Yes.
Lose that, but that can be pretty easily created, I suspect.
Correct.
Previous traffic stops, history of interactions with law enforcement, that for names of people who the police department has had contact with the past couple of years, that kind of thing?
That it would be, yes, it'd be everything. Traffic stops, arrests, cases. We would still have physical paper cases for dating back for 7 years, mm-hmm. But it's the electronic housing of that information.
Okay. Yeah. So have we talked with our prospective vendor? I mean, it's not the city of Albany. They're kind of allowing us to share their system, but the people who manage or created their system, are they involved in this discussion at all?
Yes, they are. They're in discussions. That vendor is called Sunridge. They're in discussions as we speak right now with New World, which is the vendor that's going to have that information.
Has the proposed vendor had experience retrieving data from systems not of their design?
Yes.
So they have had.
Yes, they've made several transitions from one software vendor to their product,
okay.
And have extracted data.
Okay.
I don't know the technical aspects of the difficulties. But we're working that out right now. I just want to make sure that everyone's aware that this may be a possibility.
So Chief, if I were to characterize this situation, it would create an inconvenience in worst case scenario. Would that be correct? We have access to the data. We have the paper data. It would just be harder to get to it if we needed it. Is that
correct?
And a problem that would occur regardless of whether we were, as long as we are switching to RIMS, or is with any system, new system, this would have occurred. It doesn't matter. It's not specific to actually going with Albany necessarily. It's moving to a different software.
That's correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, okay.
I just want to make sure everyone understands that it's a possibility. It's not set in stone yet. It's still being worked through. I just want to make sure that everyone's aware of that fact.
Senator Schwartzberg, I can't imagine that it's going to not be possible to store that data on some system, on some kind of a backup or a hard drive. It's got to be storable. It's just a matter of finding out how. It seems inconceivable to me that it's not going to be obtainable.
It's that it's just not easily, there's a question about whether it will be easily transported into the new software so that it would, you know, be accessible when they go to the new software. I think it's not a matter of losing it, it's a matter of fitting it into the new software. And this happens a lot with software migration. It's a very common problem in all sorts of industries.
I probably have four or five, I don't know what to call them, but databases on my computer that are from old computers, and I almost never have to go into them, but they're there. So there's got to be ways of doing it so that we can get to it if we need it.
Good evening, Jim Mott. At last night's finance meeting, we briefly touched on this. Sophia, it was very late in the evening, so maybe I missed it. But I quickly read the contract, and I didn't see any referencing to renegotiating things. I did see one element there on an item that I think was like $9,000 of the total. Is that the one that you're referring to? I'm just curious what it is that you said there are some hidden costs that still need to be discussed, and are those covered in that contract that was in the packet last night?
No.
Also, this is something new.
No, it's section G. This was still in the contract that we had last night.
So this must have been the one then that I quickly referred to last night, where I said that your contract provides for a cost of living adjustment based on CPI not to exceed 5%. But then there was one element in there which was open to further discussion. Maybe that's the one that you're referring to?
Yes. Well, section G.
Okay. I don't have the contract in front of me, so okay. I think that's the one that I was referring to, correct?
It's the technology services.
Right. And so that was a fairly small item. It was like $7,000 or $9,000.
$12,000 in the first year.
So the likelihood of that becoming a large item, is it conceivable?
No.
Okay.
No, it won't grow any bigger other than the natural growth of the entire contract. What that clause is stating is that as we get this connection established and there are costs that I did not anticipate, mm-hmm. we can go back and to negotiate for the technology fee to offset some of those costs on our end.
So if we incur costs greater than $12,000, hopefully we will get to recoup some of that back.
Got it. All right.
Gail Feldman. Sorry for letting this thing up here. I just had a couple of questions and a comment. The first is the comment, and that is in regards to the term of the contract. And I understand that this contract's to your contract with no termination unless for cause. And I'm just wondering why it is that you're locking in for 2 years for a contract that also has a cost adjustment. And that would impact your ability to move forward with any changes with the organization of the department that's been talked about by the ad hoc committee and by the community. So that's my first comment and question, why you're locking in for 2 years. And then I had some questions about the cost. I didn't quite understand this one section under the payment. So there's a list of all the costs for the different types of services that would be provided, and then F says during the first bid agreement, blah, 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 the cost will be prorated to $53,000. Is that in addition to what is listed in A, B, C, and D?
No, it's in lieu of A, $80,000. It's a discount on that.
Then it goes on to say total annual cost for the agreement of $70,000. So I wasn't clear what that was referring to.
And with respect to the timing, it takes so long to set up these systems and programs that and Albany intends to hire a dispatcher. And the reason for the discount is they won't have a dispatcher right away. It'll take time to hire someone and train them before they can be fully operational. So that's the reason for the discount. And the reason for the two-year minimum is that it takes so much time to get everything set up. And the reason for the 120-day termination is, again, because of the amount of time that it takes to get everything transitioned.
I agree with you, Gail, that flexibility would have been ideal, but once we found that these agencies began with a benchmark of 3 to 5 years, so to get them to come to 2 was kind of the lowest that we could get them to come to.
Actually, the 3-year contract.
Yeah, just to say, point of fact, it's a 3-year contract with a 2-year out.
Right.
Yes, but we cannot, without cause, end the contract before 2 years. So we don't have it. We can't just say, well, we've changed our mind. We're doing something else. All right. So I would like to make a motion that if there are no more public comment, no more, well, begin. I would like to make a motion that we approve the police dispatch and record services agreement with the caveat that it is reviewed by council and approved by council and allow Interim GM COP Ricky Hull to negotiate the signing of the agreement, and so
our second.
Any comment? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Yes.
So motion passes 4-0. The agreement, the authorization of the execution of the agreement is approved. All right, now we need to move on to new business. Excuse me. Item 8. So I'd like to introduce Bob Dice from Public Management Group. Bob has deftly and ably been guiding us through the process of hiring and constructing a general management position for Kensington, which we've never had before. Just to give a little bit of background, in May of 2015, the board agendized an item that we would form a committee to research and report back to the board on possible alternatives to the current general manager slash chief of police position and other issues related to district structure and mission statement. That led to the development of the ad hoc committee, which was finally formed in August of 2015. And that committee looked at 3 possible changes to the Kensington governance structure. They submitted their findings in October, am I correct, Gail? October of 2016, after a lengthy process with many public meetings and lots of work on their part, which we thank them for heartily. Then in January of this year, this board took on the issue of splitting the general manager and chief of police positions within our policy and procedure manual, and then we began consultation with Mr. Dice, and he will further elaborate on our process up until this point. So thank you, Bob.
Thank you. Just a little background, introduce myself. To the audience. I've been a public servant for 34 years working in cities and counties up and down the state of California, Oregon, and Washington. I've been a county administrator in Sonoma County, and I've been a city manager for 2 cities. I retired in November of 2013 as a public servant, and then After 6 months, I quickly got bored and decided to do some consulting. And my practice has been exclusively with public agencies, cities and counties, and special districts. And how I best describe it is working with agencies that are dealing with first-time situations or unique situations, whether they be challenges or problems or opportunities. And that's kind of what I've been doing for the last few years. As the president mentioned, I'm with the consulting division of Public Management Group. And I had the pleasure of meeting the president of the board at the Berkeley office. And the president mentioned contemplating hiring a general manager position and separating the duties out from what is shared with the chief of police. And there was some discussion about there was some desire for a civilian oversight of a sworn police department. There were some other challenges, the community center looking at wanting to rehabilitate this and possibly triggering some new requirements that make it maybe more complex than it was in the past, and that you provide parks and recreation services for a nonprofit and you provide solid waste services through a private sector provider. And I was asked for my feedback, and I thought this is a unique group of services. These services, by and large, other than Parks and Rec, solid waste and police, typically are provided by cities and counties, for that matter. And since, so the president was asking for my feedback, what would be, where would we attract a general manager, and what kind of skill sets are we looking for? And since police is so core to your district's function, a key skill and experience would be the oversight of a police agency. And as you know, you've been reading the paper, police agencies are going through a paradigm shift in just about every community. And somebody needs to be up front and on the new criteria for success for police departments and be very comfortable engaging the community and the governing body and having the best police department possible. So candidates should be very comfortable, very experienced, providing oversight for a police department. You don't find that in special districts. Very, very rarely. And since finances is always a big deal in public agencies, and given the solid waste function, I said a city manager would be a good person with good skill sets to do the job here. But then special district isn't large enough, it's not a city, it's not a full-service city, doesn't have the finances for a full-time general manager, so part-time city manager, or I'm sorry, a general manager was the way to go. And since it's part-time, so positive, negative, depending if you're on your applicant or if you're responsible for the budget, not to offer benefits, because it's a part-time position. So my feedback was a retired city manager would be the perfect candidate that would develop some tenure in this district and stick around. And you would not be a training grounds for somebody to move on to another city. So I'd mentioned that the city managers in California have a very strong, healthy, what they call encore group. That's the encore, it's the next career after retiring. And I thought that was the perfect candidate pool, as well as we advertised in the Special Districts Association, we advertised in newspapers. But I spent time in my relationships with those, with that candidate pool. Most of them know me, and I know most of them. So I reached out to city managers, advertised with a focus with this Encore group. I went to the city manager annual conference and introduced myself and met folks that might be interested. Like I said, we advertised the special districts group and in a public paper, and we got 16 applications. I interviewed personally six of them, and ran them through a drill, and then I wrote up an assessment, strengths, weaknesses, my take based on my experience. And then I reported that to the board of directors. And then the board of directors decided to interview five folks and spent an extensive amount of time with them, and then followed up and asked for two to come back and had even more extensive interactions with the top two. And that's the process, that's the background. Now, one of the things that I think is really important when trying to pick an executive in a public agency, or actually in any agency, whether it's public or private, is really lay out the desired skill sets. What are we looking for? And it's also an important tool to communicate to applicants. We want somebody that this community is excited about. We want somebody the board is excited about. We want somebody that likes it here and will stay here. And so this is as much about applicants interviewing the district as it is the district board interviewing applicants. It's a very unique relationship. So I communicated the kind of skills we're looking for to the applicants. So if they didn't think they had these, then don't bother applying. First one is, I think, obvious. They need to understand the public agency environment. The Public Records Act. You've got public sector tenants that are unique to the public agencies. Equal treatment and transparency and accountability. In public agencies, what separates public agencies from a lot of private agencies is it's as important how you do things as actually what you accomplish. Sometimes it's even more. And somebody needs to be comfortable in that kind of environment. You've got to be respectful of the public, stakeholders, elected official roles. There's lots of agencies providing services to the Kensington community, so we need an advocate that will collaborate with the county, the special districts, the fire district, etc. Labor relations is unique, very unique in the public sector than the private sector. They've got to be comfortable with that. There's got to be a high level of communication with the governing board and the community. The second is they've got to be adept at interacting with the Kensington community. Every community I've worked in is different. They all have their different culture, their different approach, their different style, different value systems. And you have to be sensitive to that as a chief executive of a public agency. My experience in interviewing these folks and researching the district and interviewing some other folks, this is a very high-functioning citizenry with active participation and with opinions. You got to be comfortable taking opinions and taking constructive criticism. The bar is pretty high in public agency. You got to be able to do that. You got to be able to recognize, respect, and work with, but not get consumed by the politics of the community. You got to know how things ended up the way they are. You don't play politics, but you got to respect and understand it. This is a stable community. It's an older, well-established community, and it's a community that is not busting at seams with crime. Therefore, the community has different needs from the police department than, like, a Stockton community would have of their police department. So, you've got to be respectful of all of those. You've got to have a good analytical mind. There hasn't been a general manager here full-time, or dedicated, I should say. So there's likely to be a lot of opportunities for change, having a professional that has done this for their entire career. And they've got to do that sensitively, and they can't be a bull in the china shop. Needs to have a good nose for managing change, not too fast, not too slow. And if the majority supports on the board supports this, be able to analyze and communicate evaluate the best options for the police model in the long term, provide adequate support on this remodel, good fiscal management skills. Two big issues that are critical that the general manager needs to understand is CalPERS costs and OPEB, retiree health costs, and how that impacts both the short term and long term impacts of the district's finances. Not afraid of holding police department accountable, and must have a style that is able to, because there's not a lot of staff, they got to be able to roll up their sleeves and do what another city manager would delegate. They're going to have to do it themselves sometimes. And that's basically these skill sets you'll find in a very successful city, a small city. And that's the sort of the criteria we used in selecting folks to be interviewed by me and ultimately by the board of directors. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right. Are there any questions from the public?
Is there anyone who fits?
Well, you can see how difficult it was to find a candidate that we liked as much as we liked working with Mr. Dice. So to say that we think that we have found someone is I hope, high praise indeed. So
I think it's once people got used to, wait a second, they have a police department, they're not a city. And then they did the research on Kensington. I think folks that have the right mindset see this as an opportunity. And if you haven't had a general manager, and once you have one, I'm confident in the next few months that not only this board, but you folks are going to feel really good about it.
Yes, please come forward if you are.
No, come to the mic.
We'll need you to just for the recording.
Barrels and Stolen, and I have a question for Mr. Dice. The candidates that you, the candidates that you've looked at, are they members of the ICMA, which is the organization for city managers? I've done quite a bit of research on this, and I'd like to know if that's going to be maybe included in the membership in that organization, or if they have certifications as that.
The International City County Management Association. It's the preeminent professional association for city managers and county administrators across the country. All these folks were in ICMA. They have the annual dues are very expensive, and so usually the employer pays for it. If they're retired, then they have a very small fee, and they can access some of the ICMA services like the web page and publications and such. So I didn't ask specifically whether they're the retired ICMA folks. I can check that out. My guess is probably so.
I would just encourage that, because I know that it's a very high standard for integrity and ethics, and that's what we really need in this town, is people who would get hired who really believe that and adhere to it, and having been a member or having gone through the certification would be an indication that they are at that high level.
Right, and they do have a code of ethics, and as long as you're a member, you're expected to comply with that. But even if you're retired and you're working part-time, there's an expectation you will adhere to those code of ethics. So I'll find that out.
Okay. Yep, please.
Question about process, and I realize that typically city managers do not have to go through a public vetting process of any sort before they're hired by city councils or county administrator by their boards. However, I have seen where community service districts have done some kind of public process, and we certainly did that in Kensington for the interim hire for the police GM. And I do know there are people who are interested in that, and so I'm wondering, even though you've already whittled it down perhaps to just two candidates now, whether there is a process for the community to have some say into how they think you should select the next interim or permanent GM.
Okay. Sure. The board discussed that. We assessed past practice with the interim hire. That was unusual, the event that we did in 2015 that ultimately resulted in the hire of Kevin Hart. That process, I've been part of the hiring process for every executive that we've hired during my tenure, And unfortunately, I found that that process lost us several candidates because they objected to the openness and the rather public competitive nature. But the board at the time felt that was a necessity because there had been a rift in the public trust after February of 2015. So we chose that decision for that time. Now, Mr. Dice can also address the issue, but we felt there were a couple of factors that precluded that action, which was a need to have the best possible candidates who were willing to come forward, and at no possible, no, while we were hoping to find a retired city manager, we didn't want to lose the possibility of any top candidate from coming forward. And then due to conflicts or worry about current working situations. And the other was speed. We were trying to move this process along quickly because once we identified candidates, they're very competitive. But perhaps you could elaborate more, Bob.
I think you covered it pretty well. I should take my share of the heat for this because the board asked for my input on this. And, my feedback was you did not want to add another potential barrier from getting good candidates. As the speaker mentioned, the vast majority of the selection processes for city managers, county administrators, and general managers of special districts, the vast majority are done this way. That's not to say that on occasion the employer does a community discussion process, if you will. I felt that city managers, since it's so rare, and I know it makes them uneasy, I said, I don't want to add another barrier to this first time out of the box. And I was concerned about maybe somebody was already employed and getting the word out, and then that would be in trouble. They would get in trouble, therefore they might not apply. I just didn't want to throw that barrier out. I think if there's the next recruitment in 3 to 5 or 10 years, whenever it is, you might revisit that. But I was trying to, people were asking me about the special district and never worked for a special district, yet you have sort of the skill sets of a city manager that you really need. Having that conversation, I didn't want to say, oh yeah, by the way, you're going to have a community process. So it's on me. And I think that provided some comfort level with folks that apply. Now, the one area that does it on a regular basis is school districts. You'll see them all the time, they'll have a public process. And that's because they have a whole different kind of ethos that this school district that has their superintendent intervene for another one, they actually brag about it. And they actually, it's not a negative. But if it was a city manager employed and then possibly applying over here and the word out, that's a negative. That can get them in trouble. And it's just it's the nature of the game, the nature of the beast.
And the other restriction we faced is that when we go to offer a salary, which we've just discussed the parameters of salary and what's common in the marketplace, of course, not discussing specific salary, that will be a public discussion. But we worry about having somebody swoop down and poach a candidate from us. So because we've identified such outstanding ones that we didn't want to lose anyone before we got them locked in. So, any other questions?
Jim Warren. I did want to ask about the how this salary and his scheduling is going to be handled. The talk that we've heard is that it will be on an hourly rate and that it will be part-time. We know that much. Or at least we think we know that. how is this individual going to function? Is this going to be his sole position, or is he then going to, with the remainder of his time, be working elsewhere? To what extent do you think he's going to be limited by CalPERS?
May I ask you to say he or she, please?
I'm sorry?
He or she.
To what extent do you think this person will be limited by the restrictions of, you know, 960 hours, that sort of thing? My bigger question, though, is, and you alluded to it, but I think this is very important, and that is that if we were to hire a general manager, and given that many of these individuals have been in situations where they had a full staff, and they would call a staff person in and assign a project to them, I'd be very concerned that this individual, when confronted with a thorny issue, might say, why don't we engage another party to take a look at this, and here go our costs again, because I'm concerned that we might just be hiring somebody who is going to go out and find people to solve the problems that we expected him to hire. And the other thing I think that I hope this individual will take into consideration is that there are a lot of very capable people in this community. If you had a chance to read the ad hoc report that was put together, very thorough job, very well done. And I think that this individual should rely on, or take the opportunity to rely on, some of the people in the community to help him gather the information that I think he's going to have to get to solve some of the problems that we face. So you could maybe just embellish a little bit on maybe some of the comments that you made earlier on those points.
I made the strategic error of being responsive and sitting over here away from my pen to take notes from a 8-prong question. I didn't write it down. We focused on small city managers that don't have staff to delegate to for everything. And we made it very clear that you're rolling up your sleeves and you're going to do a lot more than you might have done in the past. I would argue that in the evaluation process, the board interviews and the dialogue between me and the board debriefing, there might have been a person or two that was eliminated for that very reason, being concerned about being used to being a big fish in a big pond and trying to fit that big fish in a very small pond. So that is first and foremost one of our top 3 to 4 issues. With respect to terms and conditions of employment, I'm not sure if I'm all that comfortable getting into the details about different aspects of how hours are determined, etc. What we made it very clear is part-time, and the candidates that are interviewing are interested in part-time and not interested in going full-time. I think my recommendation to the board was over the long term, assume around 2/5 of a position. But in the near term, it's going to be a little bit more, and then eventually you'll find some equilibrium. But there's going to have to be this ongoing checking in between the general manager and the board, and vice versa, checking in on the time commitment and the hours dedicated. And it's going to be a function of managing their time appropriately. I think if I took the job, one of the things I'd want to do is be meeting some of the citizens that are really engaged with this district. That can easily consume you right there and meeting with folks. And so there's going to have to be a prioritization setting. There's going to have to be goal setting, and then things can't all be done at the first year. It's going to have to be spread out. And I think it'll be part-time, and and people are just going to have to check in on a regular basis. And with respect to CalPERS, my firm, the law side, and the consulting side, I'm on the consulting side, the law side is doing the background and the research on how the CalPERS interacts with this unique situation, because it is very unique for various reasons. Were there some things I did not respond to?
I think we don't have the 960-hour restriction, though. We're not dealing with that at this time.
We don't think we do.
No. Were there any other points that we missed, or Mr. Lossie? Dr. Lossie, excuse me. Sorry, I was seeing Mr. Waters.
Thank you, Mr. Lossie. I am hopeful that you would be a little more explicit in telling those of us who are relatively far out in the periphery of all this consideration, how far you've come at this point in your efforts to locate a city manager, several major candidates, and where are you in this process? Have you narrowed down the pool of candidates to a certain number? Do you have a strong sense of who the major one, two, three candidates are? Where do we stand? I like the process that you elucidated for us, and I find it helpful to understand that. But I don't have a sense of where we are in that process.
What I'm comfortable is saying that we're down to folks. We're down to two top candidates. And I think eventually we've got to go through a due diligence and a negotiation with the top candidate. But there's always a backup plan in case we can't get agreement with the top candidate. So I would say there's two folks that this board thought could do the job, and we're spending a little bit more time on one of the candidates. The reason why I don't want to give more details than that is if it doesn't work out, number one, I don't want the world to know that this person was the second choice. So we got two excellent candidates.
Yeah. And I think I can say the board was very comfortable with our two choices. So we're happily pursuing the next step with those candidates.
Just a quick question. Paul Doris, excuse me. I'd be very interested in knowing how wide a geographical net was cast in identifying potential candidates. It strikes me that in the immediate Bay Area there may not be too many small municipalities that have city managers that kind of roll up their sleeves and do all their own cooking. So if they were considered from outlying rural areas, something like that. And related question is, are there any relocation issues involved with any of the leading candidates?
We cast a statewide net. So we cover the entire state of California in that city manager pool. And then we did a statewide net casting, if you will, with the Special District Association. The publication was, I think, a Bay Area publication?
Yes, through the Bay Area News Group, which I think reached approximately 32 different publications, but I'm not going to, since I don't have it in front of me, I don't want to be held to that, so.
Monster.com, which is online, is, I would imagine, virtually unlimited based on people's search criteria.
So the reality is the part-time status kind of geographically excluded people outside of Northern California because it just wasn't enough compensation to move the family. If it was full-time, then that would be a different story. So there's no relocation expenses involved whatsoever.
Okay. All right. If there's nothing else, thank you so much, Bob. It's been a pleasure this evening, and we will, of course, be giving... we hope to have a document that made public in our next agenda, determining comparing salaries for general management positions around the Bay Area, and be moving forward, have more steps to, or be further along in the process. So, all right, I'd like to suggest that we just for a moment skip item 9 and go to item 10, because I think it will be a speedy discussion, I hope. The board will review and consider for approval resolutions 2017-9, 2017-10, 2017-11, prepared by NBS, that initiate the process of collecting the annual park assessment tax. This is on page 72. And Chief Hull, you will introduce this item for us.
Resolution number 2017-9. It's a resolution of the Board of Directors of the Kensington Bridge Protection and Community Service District initiating proceedings for the levy and collection of assessments for the Kensington Park Assessment District for fiscal year 2017-18. The Board of Directors of the Kensington Police Protection and Community Services District, hereafter referred to as the Board of Directors, does resolve as follows. Whereas the Board of Directors previously completed its proceedings in accordance with and pursuant to the Landscaping and Lighting Act of 1972, Part 2, Division 15 of the California Streets and Highways Code, commencing with Section 22500, the Act, to establish the Kensington Park Assessment District. And whereas the Board of Directors has retained NBS for the purpose of assisting with the annual levy of the Assessment District and the preparation and filing of an annual report, now therefore be it resolved, determined and ordered by the Board of Directors as follows. 1. Annual report. The Board of Directors hereby orders NBS to prepare and file with the Secretary of the Board of Directors the annual report concerning the levy and collection of assessments within the assessment district for the fiscal year commencing July 1st, 2017 and ending June 30th, 2018. 2. New improvements or changes to existing improvements. There are no changes to existing improvements, nor are there any items being added to the list of improvements previously approved at the formation of the assessment district.
All right. Every year the board must approve these resolutions in order to collect our park assessment tax. This year, the assessment per parcel has been elevated by approximately 3.44% based on CPI. That takes the total per parcel from $1,609 to $1,665. Any comments on the resolution 2017-9? All right. I make a motion that the board approve the adoption of resolution 2017-9.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Yes. Aye. The motion passes 4-0.
I'm wondering if it might make sense for you to just briefly explain what the other two are about, so we can.
Okay.
We need to have them read out loud. It's up to you.
Did they verify that they need to be read into the record, or are we?
They are a part of the record if you say they're a part of the record.
All right.
They're an agenda packet, so there's no need to read them verbatim.
All right, wonderful. Then we will. Resolution 2017-10. This authorizes the Board of Directors to approve the annual report concerning the levy of assessment as submitted by NBS for the fiscal year commencing July 1st, 2017 and ending June 30th, 2018. I make a motion that the that we adopt resolution 2017-10.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Yes.
Aye.
The resolution passes, excuse me, the motion passes 4-0. All right. Resolution 2017-11. This is the intention that we declare our intention to levy and collect these assessments, and that there are certain improvements listed, our district boundaries, and that we will provide notice of public hearing, which will be held on Thursday, June 8th, 2017, notice of which will appear in the public paper 10 days prior to that date, at least 10 days prior. Also that there is an increase in the annual assessment. Any comment? No, then I move that we make a motion to adopt resolution 2017-11.
I'll second.
Okay, Sylvia seconds. And all in favor?
Aye.
Yes.
Opposed? None. The motion passes 4-0. All right, thank you very much. Now we can move on to item 9. In new business, this appears on page 43 of the agenda. The board has received an updated contract from Glass & Associates Incorporated. This is in reference to the contract between the district and Glass & Associates in order to provide architectural drawings for improvements to the public safety, excuse me, to the community center. And Director Hasai, who is now chair of the park, I want to call it park buildings because that's park planning and recreation, will discuss the amendments or the changes to the documents.
So the first document, which appears on page 43 of the packet, is a fairly standard consultancy professional services agreement. It has been reviewed by council, and it is, has two exhibits attached to it. The first one is the proposal from Glass Associates and Associates, and there have been some revisions there. And Len, in particular, I want to bring to your attention excuse me one second. This relates to an issue that you brought up at the meeting when we first reviewed this. On page 65 of the packet, and it is under additional terms of service, item 3, there is some writing in blue and red, and this addresses the issue where this firm is hired generally for both architectural drawings and construction management, and they had a clause that said if we terminated them for any reason during the project, that they would not basically assume liability for their drawings and for their construction documents, which we thought was inappropriate. And they had no problem with that. So this new language here basically addresses that. And it says that they can't just shift all liability away from themselves. So if you just read that over, that should address your concern. Other changes which are noted in red and blue.
Of course. Are they noted in red and blue online or in copies?
I ask that they be in color.
I don't know that they're in color.
So just to verify for
in the agenda packet online, it's in color.
Good. Okay. Yes. Just to verify that.
If
you have a printout that is not appearing in color, the changes begin after the language is the same as the previous contract until the middle of the paragraph, which ends with the word included, period. Should begins the changed language.
Should through the end of the paragraph.
So both red and blue are changes.
Correct.
Page 65. This is item 3 on page 65. It begins the architect undertakes, and then the middle of the paragraph finishes with the words not included, and then where it starts should, during the course of the services, the owner decide to terminate the architect's services, the owner shall not cite the architect as the author of the design without written consent of the architect. That until the conclusion of the paragraph is new language. I want to assure everyone, Director Bisai has worked with Judith Propp of the Public Law Group, who has been involved with this project since last fall, to shepherd us through and make and clarify the language in the contract.
Right, as well as our current general counsel, because she obviously needed to be briefed.
Absolutely.
And other changes were just reflective of the understanding of the project's needs going forward. At this point, just clarifying a few items. And quite a bit of the language also comes out of the American Institute of Architects template contract. So those were the changes that were made to the proposal. And then the other item that's attached is the insurance certificates. And then there are two other items, large reports that are on file at the district and are incorporated by reference into this contract. And they are referenced as exhibits C and D.
All right. Are there any public board or public comments regarding these changes? All right. Just as a reminder, in January of 26th of 2017, the board authorized myself to execute this contract on behalf of the district, which I will do. So this is not an action item tonight. It's just an item of reference. And to take public comment and board comment in case clarification was needed. All right. There's nothing further, then I'll move that we adjourn the meeting.
I second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Aye. All right, motion passes. Thank you so much for coming this evening. We look forward to seeing you again, hopefully on May 11th. Good evening. All right.
These meetings are now.
So boring, you know. We could throw some glassware at the end.
Or
I don't